Hello, can you hear me?
I do apologize. My recorder was running and I had to unplug it because of the background noise.
Oh, I'm glad the audio got better. Good. Okay, good. I didn't want to have to nag about that. All right. Well, thanks for your patience. Sorry, it took me a minute or two to get into the lobby. My computer seems to be a little slow this morning, but I think we are good and ready to go.
Now that the refrigerator is off, is the audio quality good?
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to turn on Audacity now, so it should be recording on my end. All right. Do you want me to start with the note I sent?
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you.
Okay. The note was a little low on information. I believe it just said that I've heard you say that if you don't learn to talk to women by your early 20s, you probably aren't going to, you're doomed. You're not going to learn that later in life.
Well, early 20s might be a little bit too, but yeah, certainly by your mid to late 20s, if you're not dating, it's going to get progressively tougher. But sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. I appreciate that correction. I was overstating it. I was being dramatic. But I'm 29, and I want to know what I can do to change that before it's too late.
All right. Well, tell me a little bit about your history of talking or not talking to women.
Do you want me to start with childhood or start?
I would say let's start with the dating stuff first and then go back further.
Okay. My only dating history is within the last 8 months, which I want to say about September of last year, I started attending speed dating events. So if you count a speed date as a date, I've had quite a few, but only one of them ever actually turned into a real date. And that was only just the first date. We decided we were incompatible after that date. That is legitimately the only history I have.
So one date that came out of speed dating?
Yes.
And how do you deal with your sexual needs?
So I've stopped watching pornography, which has been also around a similar time frame of the last 8 months. I don't know if this is, we need to go into this or not, but I took that fairly seriously, and I sought professional help with it, which I didn't think was particularly helpful, but the interesting thing that came out of it was I did some brain scans, or brainwave monitoring at any rate, and that it... Pornography really does have a measurable impact on your brainwaves, and it has started to normalize since I quit.
Oh, good for you. Okay. All right. And when did you first get exposed, and what was the length of your habit?
I want to say about 2020. I know that's not a typical pattern, so I would have been about 23, and that'd been about 6 years ago.
Got it. Okay. All right. And what is your theory as to why you don't date?
Do you mind if I go through the childhood briefly?
Absolutely. To that fine, point? Yeah. If that's a good time, sure.
Okay. I was born in 1997. I think it was around 2011, which I would have been 13 or 14. I was put on some psychiatric medication, which I remained on until 2018. But fill in a little bit there. I was in the middle of three brothers, one about 3 years older, one about 3 years younger. We were homeschooled in the worst stereotype, or the worst straw man sort of sense, that we were in a rural area, so we were isolated both geographically and socially. And so legitimately, it was noteworthy the times that I would speak to someone outside of the family. I don't want to oversell that. It would happen on a monthly basis, but weeks would go by with negligible contact with anyone outside the family. There was a lot of yelling, screaming, some physical abuse, but I think the neglect was the worst, that at no point in my childhood did I get any recommendations for how to make friends to date, anything like that. And it didn't seem to bother anyone that neither myself or my siblings were.
And sorry, just remind me, how many siblings?
Two. Two brothers, one older, one younger, about 3 years between each of us.
Okay, got it.
Okay, and the psychiatric medication was basically because I was violent towards my siblings. The pattern there for 7 years or so until the age of 21 was that I would be put on progressively lower doses of medication because it made me too sleepy and passive. And then it would be low and I would have enough energy to get into a fight with a sibling. Then the dose would be increased. So between like 13, 14, and 21, I reached almost no social development milestones. There was nothing of the normal social development that would take place during the teenage years. Absolutely none of that happened.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Thank you. And then, I don't know if this is relevant, but in 2016, I took an economics class that exposed me to Austrian economics, which I feel was a significant turning point in my life because maybe not philosophy proper, but at least exposed me to the ideas of reason and evidence and understanding the world through a logical framework. But, excuse me, at the time and until relatively recently, I would say that my brain was very chaotic and disorganized patterns of thought and action, and that started me down the road to philosophy and to rationality. In 2019, the year after I went off my medications, through Austrian economics, I began listening to podcasts and audiobooks and pursuing truth, as it were. And that led me to a number of books about childhood development and so forth. And I, for the first time, began to realize that something was wrong with the way my life had been up to that point, which I think culminated in me going off the medications 2 years later, or not culminated, but led to me going off the medications in 2018.
And sorry, how long were you on the meds for?
Around 7 years.
Was it multiple meds?
I started with one that made me very suicidal, switched to another one, which was the main one, but in the last year or two, I was also on an additional one.
And did you have constant dosage, or did the dosage change over time?
It was up and down. That the main medication made me very tired and just numb, inactive. And so if there had been no altercations between myself and my siblings for a period of time, they would reduce that dosage because they were concerned about the fact that I was a zombie all the time. But they didn't have any additional treatment protocol. They would just reduce the dose until I had another fight with a sibling and then increase it again. So there was a constant up and down pattern of the medication dosage.
Okay, got it.
In 2019, my mother died, which I think a lot of thoughts had been, it seems to me, that a lot of thoughts that hadn't been safe for me to think while she was still alive, I started thinking after she was dead. It was now safe for me to start questioning things to a greater extent. And then 2021, I believe it was, I could be wrong about that date. I don't want to nail that down too precisely. But I believe sometime in 2021 was when I started listening to your podcast. In 2023, I left home and defooded with the surviving parent and the older sibling. I have some contact with the younger sibling. But he's a lost cause, I would say. And for the between 2023 when I moved out and mid-year 2025, I was establishing, I was getting my shit together. had some health complications, getting my finances together and getting my head on straight. It wouldn't have been an opportune time to start dating because I was not in a position where I could form a decent relationship, or so it seemed to me at the time. But middle of the year last year, I recognized I think I can do that now, and I need to do something now, or it will probably never happen, which is why I started speed dating. But my skill set is still very limited. I don't know if speed dating is even a decent option or not.
Okay. And so, sorry, which one of your brothers was the lost cause? Was it the older?
So to be clear, the older one is evil.
Evil, okay.
Which is why I don't talk to him. Now, it's the younger one that I don't want to say he's a good person, but I could talk to him about philosophy and morality within a family structure, and he would understand what I'm talking about. The problem is that he's around 26. He has no job, still lives at home, and has no particular interest in ever getting a job or leaving home or doing anything.
He lives off your father's income?
Both father and the other siblings' income, I believe.
Okay, so they're paying his bill. So they're enabling this laziness.
Yes. He's addicted to pornography and video games.
Mm-hmm.
And so long as he continues to have access to both, which he does, he's unlikely to ever try and change his life.
Okay. Got it. All right. And what is evil about your older brother?
Outside the family, he's not criminally inclined or anything. It's just that he doesn't see any problems with the way the family was. So, during the time when I was on medication, I was, myself and the younger sibling were going to therapy, which it was not productive therapy, but in any event, we started talking to each other on commuting to and from therapy. And so when I started to get the ideas that maybe there was problems with the family and the abuse and neglect and so forth, he kind of told me, well, what took you so long? He had already hated our parents, basically. But the older sibling, he's always stood by and defended our parents and how we were raised, etc.
No, are you still on?
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
You paused there for a sec. I wasn't sure if we lost you. Sorry, go ahead.
I think that was the end of the statement. Sorry.
Okay, so I still don't know what's evil about your older brother.
Well, he doesn't see a problem with child abuse.
Oh, so he understands the abuse, but he approves of it.
He wouldn't call it abuse, so I don't know if he would call it understands the abuse, but he doesn't have any significant problems with how we are raised. So he does support child abuse. He wouldn't call it that, obviously, but that's what's evil about him. The younger one recognizes that how we were raised was abusive. But he's in a good situation financially, or at least, well, he's not willing to excommunicate the family because of the abuse. That he would rather stay on because he gets the subsidy.
Sorry, so he takes money from your parents, your father, sorry.
The youngest one, yes. The younger okay. one.
But the eldest, I'm still trying to, so he supports he supports child abuse or doesn't acknowledge it, but he himself is not abusive. Is that right?
If he was in a relationship, I would suspect he would be abusive to some extent. Probably not physically. It wasn't like he was nonviolent when we were growing up, but I would usually win in a fight, so he wasn't particularly physically abusive. He can be verbally abusive or emotionally abusive or Is there something specific
Listen, you called him evil, and I'm not disagreeing with you. I just want to understand what you mean by that. So is he evil because he supports or does not criticize child abuse? And I'm not disagreeing with you. I just want to understand what you mean when you say he's evil.
He does. He meets all the descriptions you just gave. And to me, that's sufficient. If you want me to point out other character flaws he has, I can. I just don't know if that's necessary.
Well, I mean, evil to me is people who use violence in the present and so on, simply supporting corruption or violence without committing it yourself is not quite all the way to evil, at least as far as I would think about it.
If you want to change that label to something less than evil, I'm not going to argue about it. He doesn't use violence in the present because he can't get away with it. If he could, I'm not convinced he'd be opposed to it.
Okay, that's fine. So I just wanted to understand what you meant. Okay, sorry, I don't want to. You're right. I mean, it's not probably worth hair splitting too much on this. I just wanted to know what you meant, because to me, if somebody says, "Oh, my brother is evil," it's like, "Oh, he's in jail for murder, or you know, he's selling drugs to children, or he beats up his girlfriend, or something like that." So I just wanted to know.
I understand your confusion.
If we're gonna have the conversation, you're gonna have to let me finish my sentences. Have I been pretty good listening so far?
Yes.
Okay, so please don't overtalk me when I put in my 5% of feedback so far. Because it's really tough to finish sentences if you start talking within a few seconds of me saying something. So just take a deep breath. Just let me finish my thoughts, and I'll do my best to let you finish yours. I think I've been doing all right with that. So, okay, so tell me a little bit about the violence that you had against your siblings. Was it against your younger brother?
I don't remember a great degree of specificity. I think it was disproportionately towards the younger brother, but it was also towards the older brother as well.
Okay, so tell me what would happen and what ages and so on.
I do not know what age it started. I wasn't put on medication until around the 12 to 14. Type time frame. So it must have had a significant escalation around that time, I would think. But I think it was going on to a lesser extent. I'm guessing to maybe when I was 5 or 6, I don't know. It didn't conclude, I don't think, until after I went off of medication, until I was like 21 or something like that. I broke a knuckle.
Sorry, I missed that last part. You said it lasted until you went off medication at the age of 21?
I think, yeah, around that time.
Okay.
I broke a knuckle on a younger sibling's head when I was maybe 18. So it continued for some time.
You were an adult, your brother was 15?
Around that, yeah.
Okay, so you broke a knuckle on a child's head.
Yes.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. How appalling. Okay, sorry, go on.
Do you think that the knuckle breaking example would be a incident worth exploring? Or do you want me to come put it
in
the example?
Well, no, I'm asking you in general. I'm trying to understand how often you were violent and what form the violence took.
Well, it's hard to say how often because of the medication.
Okay, can you just do me a favor, bro? Can you hang on? Like I feel like I'm losing my mind here. I keep asking you these questions, and you keep giving me these non-answers. I don't remember. It's not clear. I don't know exactly. It's hard to recall. I just need a general answer to the best of your ability. I'm not asking for times and dates and footage. I understand that memory is hazy, but also it wasn't that long ago. It was 11 years ago, right, that you broke your knuckle. So I just need a general answer. I can't spend like 20 minutes trying to extract this information from you. And if you don't remember anything, that's fine. I find that a little confusing. Was it once a week? Was it once a month? Did you beat him till your knuckles bled? Was it just a push? Like, I just need some general information, because the non-answers are driving me a little batty.
I apologize, you're correct. This may just be an excuse, but I will say that everything before I went off medication is a little fuzzier.
All right, so I just asked you for direct information. Hang on. I just asked you for direct information to the best of your knowledge, and you say, well, things are a little fuzzy.
Well,
okay, listen, are you going to answer the question? It's fine. If you don't want to answer the question, that's fine. But then we'll move on to another topic. But I just can't spend my time spinning wheels in the mud, so to speak. I mean, if you were violent enough to be put on medication, I assume there was considerable violence.
I don't think I actually remember well enough to give you a useful answer. I can.
But you are deciding for me, hang on, you are deciding for me what is a useful answer, and you can't make that decision for me. I decide what is useful or not. So let me just ask you this. Was it closer to once a year, once a month, or once a week that you would get into some sort of physical fight with your brothers?
I would say it was closer to once per month.
Okay, once per month. And is that once per month for both of your brothers, or once a month with each of your brothers, or twice a month as a whole?
My guess would be a 2-to-1 ratio of twice as many altercations with the younger as opposed to the older.
Oh, yeah, the older's bigger, so he's tougher to fight.
Well, the size discrepancies are a little strange in the family, but I don't, you're generally correct. And some sort of physical altercation, maybe say every 3 weeks and 2-to-1 ratio.
Okay. And what would be a typical fight? Like, what would it involve? What would be happening? Like, hair pulling, dragging, kicking downstairs, punching, slapping? Like, what would it mean?
The only one who was ever seriously injured was myself with the knuckle break.
Well, I'm pretty sure that wasn't fun for your brother either.
I acknowledge that. I'm just trying to... no one was ever thrown downstairs. I don't recall any weapons were ever used or implements.
So was it like punching?
Yes, that would be the punching, shoving, grappling.
And when you say the size discrepancy, were you larger than your brothers at some points?
Towards the later years, they both weighed over 350 pounds, and I was between 200 and 250.
Oh, so you were punching fat people?
Yes.
And they couldn't really fight back because they were too heavy, right?
I mean, they outweighed me by something like 50%.
No, no, come on.
I don't want to characterize
them. Come on. Can fat people fight very well?
It's fighting them seemed a challenge at the time.
Well, you would be more agile, right? And you would be able to maneuver better. You'd be faster. And you would get tired less quickly, because any kind of physical exertion when you're that heavy is gets you short of breath within like 10 seconds, right?
I suppose so.
Well, you were there, wouldn't you say? That's the case. I mean, if you had to put money on a guy who was 200 pounds fighting a guy who was 350 pounds, who would you think would win? Who would you put your money on? I mean, there's a reason why there are weight classes in boxing, right?
Well, but the weight classes is that the heavier people would win in a fight with the lighter people, isn't it?
No, I know, but it's heavier in terms of muscle. It just means that strength matters. And generally, somebody who is 200 pounds has more muscle mass than people who are 350 pounds, because normally you get to 350 pounds because you're not exercising. But you can't really exercise very much at that weight. Okay, well, listen, I don't want to spend too much time on that. Okay, so a couple of, maybe twice a month, maybe three times a month, you would get into fist fights where you had some advantage with your brothers, right?
I would characterize it as every 3 weeks. So, yeah, that's accurate.
Well, yes, but sometimes it would be more than once a month because you'd fight with one brother, then another.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't have them in rotation, right? I can't fight you. It hasn't been haven't been 6 weeks since our last fight, right? So I mean, twice a month, maybe, whatever, that's fine. Okay, so you didn't use implements, like you didn't use bats or straps or anything. So there was that. And what did your parents say about this violence?
To me or to other people?
I'm not sure why you would ask me that question. Let me just tell me what you know.
They were always angry when it happened. I can't recall them saying to me anything that seemed designed to address the problem. They went to the psychiatrist, started the medication, and enrolled myself and the younger one in therapy. That was all that I remember.
And how did therapy go?
There were a few different therapists over the years. I can't recall any of them actually trying to address the problem. And I would basically give a report of what had happened during the week and then come back another week and give another report.
Okay. And did you learn any anger management strategies or negotiation strategies? I mean, what did the therapists suggest that you do to reduce the violence?
I can't recall any suggestions.
So I'm sorry, what would happen in therapy?
I would give a report and that would basically it.
I'm not a therapist, but I'm not sure that's it. I mean, the report was like violence is up, violence is down. That takes what, 2 to 5 minutes? And then you've got another 55 minutes or 50 minutes in the session. There must have been something that was talked about.
And obviously there was talk to fill the time, but it was never about anything consequential. So I wouldn't just report violence. I would report whatever had happened that week. So obviously I can talk for an hour about the events of 7 days, but...
Oh, so you'd say like I played a video game, I watched a movie and went to school and had a test and like that would be...
We never went to school.
Well, sorry, but
my younger brother went to school.
Homeschool, studied stuff or whatever. And so that would be the sum total of your therapy would just be talking about your week?
Yes.
That's not therapy. I mean, I'm sure you know that.
Yes.
And you had a couple of different therapists who all did the same thing.
I believe it was 3 in total. And yeah, it was all about the same.
Okay. All right. So you didn't get any anger management strategies or negotiation strategies or breathing exercises or visualization exercises or trying to figure out why you got so angry. None of that happened. Is that right?
At the very end, within 1 or 2 sessions of my last session ever, a therapist said that they had recently started studying EMDR, and I thought that might help me, but I never got an EMDR session. That was the closest I ever got to a specific strategy to address the problem.
Okay. And what's your theory as to why you were so violent?
Well, I mean, I guess it worked in the short term, that if there was an immediate negative stimulus, that if I was violent, that stimulus would stop. Obviously, it wasn't helpful in the long term. It was not an environment where trying to talk things over ever led to results. So perhaps I felt that was the only means to try and bring about any change or control. Does that seem like an adequate explanation?
I'm not quite sure. So you're saying you couldn't ever talk or reason about things with your siblings. Is that right?
Your siblings or parents.
Okay. So, I mean, did you try a bunch of times and it didn't work or?
Yes.
Okay. So, give me an example if you could.
Between 2019 and 2023.
No, as a child.
I don't want to just give non-answers here, but I'm going to struggle to think.
No, if you don't remember, that's fine. I don't want to, don't make anything up, but I was just wondering if you remembered.
I can remember maybe some examples as a child, but I can also remember being violent before those examples. So they're not the genesis of the problem.
Okay, so what were the examples before you were violent of trying to reason with your siblings?
Just to clarify, reason with siblings. An early example is not really coming to me. So it was definitely violent before these examples. How early or how late would be useful? Like, if the earliest
I'm just trying to understand something. You said, hang on. So you said, I couldn't reason with my siblings, so I used violence. And I understand that. And so what I'm trying to figure out is, did you try to reason with your siblings and it failed, and therefore you used violence? Or did you use violence on the belief that you couldn't reason with your siblings but didn't really try?
I know that into my 20s, reasoning with the older sibling was ineffective. But whether I tried before I started getting violent, I don't know. That's lost to the mist of history.
Okay. All right. So violence was just like a go-to thing. I mean, based upon examples and, you know, children are pretty hot-tempered as a whole, particularly boys. So violence was just your strategy in a sense. And it wasn't because you kept trying to reason but couldn't reason, but violence was just what you did, if I understand this correctly.
I would say that that's also tended to be a behavior modeled from our parents, that they didn't try to reason, they just got violent. So I would say I was probably experimenting with violence before I knew that there was an alternative strategy.
Well, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying, and certainly that has a big influence. But it's not the answer, because there are lots of children who are aggressed against who don't themselves become aggressive.
But do you have an idea what the answer might be?
I don't. But it's not just causal. Like, I don't want the show to present the argument that if you are aggressed against as a child, you automatically become violent. I mean, there's some other factor. I'm not sure what it is. I mean, I was aggressed against. I didn't become violent. A lot of my friends were aggressed against and didn't become violent. And you've heard people on this kind of call-in show who were aggressed against who didn't become violent. So I'm not sure what the answer is. I don't know. It's not deterministic because there are choices in there, especially by the time you're 18, right?
Yes.
Now, when you talk about beating up your fat siblings, what do you feel?
I'm remorseful about the younger one, but not the older one.
Okay, and tell me what do you mean?
Well, I guess to the first approximation, I still don't like the older one, but I do like the younger one. So obviously that makes it easier to think it was justified to fight with the older one. Also, of course, he was always larger, versus until in our teenage years, younger one was smaller. So obviously it's less of a fair fight.
Do you think that your emotions are communicated in how you speak of it?
No.
What do you think that is?
What makes me believe they're not communicated, or why are they not communicated?
Why do you think I'm not getting any sense of emotion from you?
I'm not sure.
Well, okay, let me ask you this. You say you sort of feel remorse for beating up on your younger brother, but not on your obese older brother, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what do you feel remorseful about with regards to your younger brother?
Well, in recent years, reasoning with him has been effective. So that would suggest, to some extent, it's been effective. So that would suggest that I could have reasoned with him then. I just chose not to. Whereas the older brother, reasoning has not been effective. So it wouldn't have been effective to try and reason with him at that time. So obviously I still had the choice in the matter, but I had fewer alternatives.
Okay, so because you can't reason with your older brother, you don't regret violence with him when you were younger? I'm not trying to trap you. I just want to make sure I understand your thinking.
Yeah, that's a big part of the explanation, why the difference.
Okay. And have you talked to either of your brothers about the violence that you had as children?
Some with the younger one, not with the older ones.
Okay. And what is your younger brother's perspective on this?
No, I haven't talked with him enough about it. So there has not been an apology or the sort of conversation there should have been about it.
Okay, got it. And how do you think this conversation is going as a whole?
I'm not sure. It went in a different direction than I was expecting, but my experience with your work is that's usually where the important things are found.
And in what way is it going in a different way than you're expecting?
Well, I have never been violent or even particularly aggressive with anyone outside the family, or even really, I guess, since post 2019 or maybe even 2018 timeframe. So I didn't think that the violence, that I had kind of written that off as a situational event, that I was almost like I was in prison and had to join a gang to protect myself. I know it's a tortured comparison, but that I didn't have the option of getting away from other people if they were being aggressive. I just had to fight it out. But now that I'm free, as it were, that really doesn't affect me going forward.
Oh, so sorry. Sorry if I misunderstood something. So it was the case that your brothers started the fights. Because you said you couldn't get away from, So you said you couldn't get away from the aggression. And of course, if you're in a prison, hang on, let me talk.
Sorry.
So if it's the case that you're in a prison, then you have to join a gang because the more experienced inmates are going to fight you, going to stab you or shiv you or whatever they do, right? So you have to join a gang for protection, but you're not starting fights, right? So if that's the case, if the analogy holds, then it would be the case that your brothers, despite the fact that they were 300 or 350 pounds, were picking fights with you or starting to assault you, and you were acting in self-defense. Listen, that could be the case. I mean, it's your history, not mine, so I have to go with what you say. So if it is the case that you were responding to their violence, that's a different matter, and I can understand the prison analogy then, if that makes sense. So, like, you broke your knuckle on your 15-year-old brother's head because he had started the fight. It was like self-defense, right?
In that particular example, I think I hit him first.
That changes the equation then quite a bit. Then you're the prison gang, not somebody who has to join a gang. You're the head of the prison gang.
Obviously, it was not the case that I started. I went physical first in all the fights.
Okay, you don't have to tell me. Hang on. Sorry to interrupt you. You don't have to tell me obvious things, right? I absolutely understand, as a guy with 3.5 brain cells, I absolutely understand that in every altercation, you didn't start it. I get that. But you were saying, like the prison gang analogy, or that you were stuck in a situation and the only response was violence, would be that you were the victim and they were the aggressors in the bulk or the majority of the cases, or the vast majority of the cases, because otherwise it would be a different situation, right?
Well, obviously it wasn't 0% of the time or 100% of the time. I feel confident it was more than 50% of the time that I swung first.
Okay, so you were the aggressor in maybe the majority of the cases.
Well, to be clear, in the prison, if someone's stealing your food, but you swing first, that's still self-defense. So,
Sorry, what do you mean by stealing? Hang on. What do you mean by stealing your food? You mean like, because in prison, you only have one meal, and if somebody else takes it, you go hungry. Are you saying that your brothers colluded to starve you?
No, it was just a metaphor.
Well, then stop using metaphors that always paint you as the victim.
Well, I want to be clear that I was more aggressive, but it was never the case that I attacked someone for no reason. I didn't seek out fights recreationally. There was always some sort of pre-instigation.
Well, hang on. I mean, for the first frickin' 20 minutes of our conversation, you could barely remember which way was up as a child. And now you remember every single time there was a reason. Well, how can it be that everything's foggy, but you have complete precision about every time you fought?
If there were if I was premeditating wanting to get into a fight, I feel like I would remember that one incident as it being unique. So obviously most of the, I don't want to say what percentage, but frequently it was very petty grievances that led to a fight.
Okay, but if you're swinging first and it's not self-defense, then you would be the aggressor. Now, the aggressor's always going to say there was a reason. Hang on, the aggressor's always going to say there was a reason, right? So if I go and punch a guy in the bar and the cops say, well, why did you punch him? And I said, well, he looked at me and sneered. Okay, that's a reason, right? That's a reason I punched him. Is it a good reason?
No.
So that's what I'm trying to understand. Of course, there's reasons why you fought. Everyone has a reason, sure. I mean, the Bin Laden had a reason, but the question is good reason? Now, a good reason to use violence is self-defense. But if you're the initiator of violence in the majority of cases, then that's not self-defense. You say, oh, but there was a reason. They grabbed my toy, or they looked at me funny, or they wouldn't give me that part of the couch that I wanted, or whatever, right? But you're still the violent aggressor, well, right?
If you think it would benefit me to change my perspective on this, I don't want to defend my own self-image if it's costing me something. But
why do you think I'm focusing on this?
Well, because it's important.
Well, that's by definition. Yet, but why is it important?
Could I make a couple of anecdotes?
No, I'd like you to answer the question, please. That's more polite.
Of why you think why I think you're focusing on it?
Yeah.
I don't know. Why are you?
Well, if you had a communicable disease, let's say you got measles or, I don't know, a bad cold or a flu or something, would you go to a dinner party?
No.
Why not?
Because it might spread.
Right. So you would be a form of toxicity, so you would keep yourself isolated, right?
Mm-hmm.
So personally, I think that the reason you don't date is you feel that you're toxic because you assaulted your brothers, and so you're not worthy of love.
Mm.
And of course, I understand you were isolated in the country, your parents were violent, and you have a lot of excuses, for sure, and some of those may even be valid. But generally, see, the way that it works is, if you had a cure for cancer, would you keep it hidden?
I've heard this analogy before, and no.
Okay. And if you had written the most beautiful song in the world, would you just keep it sitting in a drawer?
No.
So if you had a great treasure, you wouldn't hide it from the world. What do we hide from the world?
Dangerous things.
Yeah, that which we are ashamed of, or that which is dangerous or negative to others, right? So, do you believe that you would be a wonderful husband to a virtuous woman and a great father to your children or two children?
This may sound counterintuitive, but I do.
Well, why would you keep all of this greatness from women? Because by not dating, you are keeping a woman from having a great life with you, and children from having a loving father. So you are keeping this treasure from the world, and either you don't think it's a treasure, or you're horribly angry at the world, and you are on strike and keeping your wonderful husband and fatherness from the world for some reasons of spite or hostility or something like that. So there's a reason why. See, dating is just a market. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
Dating is just a market. And you have a good for sale called yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And why does somebody not want to put their goods for sale in the market? And this isn't even sale. This is just trade. You're not trying to sell things. You're just trading, right? So why would someone not put their goods for sale on the market? I mean, what are your reasons? Why? I mean, just thinking about this like a farmer's market or a local garage sale, or like, why would someone not put their goods for sale on the market?
Would you allow me, I promise I'll come back to this, but would you allow me to mention a couple of things that I think might, I don't know if they change the context or not. But I think they might help.
I with skepticism, I say, go ahead. I mean, because you really seem like you want to do it and you seem distracted until you do. So go ahead.
Okay. I thought of a memory came to me of an incident where it wasn't a particularly aggressive fight, but where I was enthusiastic about a fight. So I just wanted to mention that. I can think of one example.
Okay, go ahead.
For the sake of brevity, I wasn't going to go into that example. I was just going to
mention that I didn't think of one. You said that you didn't start fights and you didn't do it for recreation. So if you did, I would like to know the circumstances, if you don't mind.
I don't remember much of the circumstances.
Oh, my God.
I just remember.
Oh, my God. You're killing me.
I don't remember this.
What are you doing? I thought of a counterexample, but I can't remember it.
I don't remember what happened. I just remember that I wasn't angry when attacking a sibling, that I was like gleeful about it. That's the only thing I actually remember.
So it was like a sadistic pleasure.
Yeah,
gleeful violence that you want to inflict is kind of sadistic.
I wasn't trying to injure him per se.
Okay, please don't start hedging this nonsense, right?
There were times when I was very angry and I really wanted to injure them. In this case, it was, I don't know, performative more so.
And okay, listen, if you can't remember the details, let's move on because there's something else you wanted to say.
Okay, yes. I can recall going to parents with a complaint about a sibling. So I tried to handle whatever the complaint was. It happened numerous times, so I can't think of a specific complaint.
Sorry, what age?
And I would guess 8.
Okay, got it.
But I know it happened over a period of years.
And was it about your older or younger sibling in this case?
In this particular case, it was about the younger one.
Okay, got it.
Because the response I got was, well, you're bigger than him, aren't you? So at other times, they were very upset about it. But in some cases, the specific instructions I got from our parents was to solve the problem with violence.
That's
the implication there.
Listen, sorry, you were there. I wasn't. That's not the immediate thing that I get.
What do you get?
Well, if you say my younger brother is bothering me or he's bullying me or he hits me, then saying, well, you're bigger than him means don't let him. Doesn't mean go beat him up.
I mean, it's not like giving him a beat down. But it does mean, you know, use your superior strength to physically remove him from the environment, at least.
Well, or if he's grabbing your toy and you're bigger, you're saying, look, you're 8, he's 5, just hang on to your toy. Look, it's not great parenting, but I'm not sure it's licensed to beat him up.
I got the impression it was more than don't allow him to take the object from you.
No, but you were already in a violent frame of mind, so... and you'd already committed violence against him. So it would be likely that you would have that interpretation. I'm just saying from the outside, it could be saying, use your superior size so that he doesn't bother you or he doesn't take your toy, not you can end up breaking your knuckle on his head.
Well, if I was told that at the age of 8, that was before the violence was very significant.
No, you don't know that because you can't remember much about that time.
That is true.
Yeah, so hang on. And the other thing too is, you also said that your parents got very upset about the violence and sent you to therapy and got you on medication. So without a doubt, your parents didn't want you using violence, right?
I'll consider that.
No, this is what you told me. You can't say, my parents got really upset when there was violence. My parents sent me to a psychiatrist. Well, they sent me to a psychologist. No, I'm still talking. They sent me to a psychiatrist. They sent me to a psychologist. They got really upset at me using violence. But one time they said this ambiguous thing that I figured was permission for beatdowns.
To be clear, if they were encouraging violence at 8, but then were opposed to it at 13.
But you can't remember.
Their positions could have evolved on that.
No, you can't remember. I have to interrupt you because you keep going around in these circles. You can't say, Steph, I can't answer your questions because I don't remember things, and then say, you know, specifically when your parents were or weren't against violence. Everything that you're saying is covering your ass. I mean, personally, I think you need to grapple with the fact that you beat up on a semi-regular basis your brothers. and that you were the aggressor. And again, I have sympathy for the situation as a whole, but the question is not what I think, but what does your conscience think of the fact that even when you were an adult, you were pile driving your kid brother in the head? I mean, that's not fun to live with, is it?
No. The one last thing I wanted to mention is that my social isolation is not specific to dating. As I say, that may not be here nor there, but I'm very reserved with everyone.
Right. So do you have great value that you are withholding from the world? Like, I think I'm pretty valuable in terms of philosophy and conversation and self-knowledge and spreading virtue. So I go out into the world and I take my punches, so to speak, and I speak reason to the world and I interfere with the plans of evildoers and they get their punches back and so on, right? So I believe that I have great value to offer to the world. So I go out into the world and I offer up that value. And to a large degree, the world both agrees and strongly disagrees, which is kind of what you would expect when it comes to morals. So if I believe I have great value in the world, but I isolate myself, what would that mean? Why would I do that?
Well, my interpretation of it, which may be inaccurate, is that I'm afraid of other people. So specifically, people who I interact with on a regular basis, I've been forced to develop relationships with. I think I could name several examples who would agree that I brought significant value to them, but I still don't initiate conversations with people where we're not forced together. And my explanation for that, which could just be a coping mechanism, would be that it's fear of hostility, that after I've been around someone enough to where I think I have a estimation of how they'll react, I'll talk with them, but I don't like to have more than necessary conversations with people that I'm not confident what their reaction will be.
So it's that other people are bad, that's why you keep to yourself?
I understand, of course, that's a very self-serving narrative.
No, I'm just trying to understand. It's other people are bad and aggressive, so you keep to yourself.
Yes.
Okay. And what evidence do you have that people are worse than you were in the past?
Worse than I was in the past? Maybe I don't, but that doesn't mean they're safe to interact with just because they're not that bad.
Okay. So other people get great value from you, but you withhold that value from them because they're bad. Or they could get great value from you.
They could. I'm not saying that they're bad, but...
No, because they could be aggressive and wrong and mean and so on,
yes,
right? So that's bad, right?
Not that any particular person is necessarily bad.
Okay, but it's enough for you to be isolated, so it means it's a pretty strong principle, right? So let's not caveat this to death, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you have a great deal of value to offer people, but they don't deserve it because they're bad.
I characterize it more as a self-defense mechanism than whether they deserve it or not.
Well, if you have great value to offer, then you should share that with people, right? If you were a wonderful singer, wouldn't it be nice to sing for people if you enjoy singing? If you are able to heal people at a touch, shouldn't you touch people and heal them? If you tell wonderful stories and you enjoy telling stories, shouldn't you tell wonderful stories and entertain people around the firelight?
That all makes sense as far as it goes, yes.
Okay, great. So tell me the value, and I'm not disagreeing with you. I just want to make sure I understand it from your perspective. If someone were to ask me, like, what's the value, Steph, that you bring to the world or to relationships and so on, I mean, I won't go through the whole list, but I think it's fairly clear that I certainly believe that I bring a lot of value, and people have wanted to talk to me my whole life because my insights provide them value. So I would say, I'm a good person, I'm a funny person, I'm a warm person, affectionate, and so on. So I know how I provide value, and fortunately, there are enough people in the world who agree with me that I can make a go of it. So what are the value, or the values, not the morals, but what is the value, or are the values that you provide to people in the world?
Do you want me to get very specific with examples of people that I think I've brought a specific value to, or could I say the
Jesus Christ,
more general?
Man. Jesus Christ.
I'm sorry.
Okay, just have a conversation. What are you doing all this lawyering with me for? See, this is a way you don't add value.
Agreed.
I just keep asking you questions and you keep not answering them. That's annoying.
Well, I'm a little afraid of saying something inaccurate, and I'm afraid if I give you bad information, then, you know, I'm harming us both.
What do you mean bad information? I don't know what you mean. You mean you lie? Well, yeah, don't lie, sure.
If I mischaracterize something inadvertently.
Well, I'm not sure what that means. If you make a mistake?
Yeah, I would consider this a high-stakes conversation.
But I'm asking you what value you think you provide to people.
Okay.
How can you be mistaken? It's like asking you, what is your favorite color? Can you be mistaken?
Well,
I mean, all you can do is lie or not, and I'm sure you're going to tell the truth, so I'm not sure what you mean by... What if you make a mistake? I'm asking you what value you think you provide to people. Because you say, I have great value. I'd be a great husband, a great father, and I provide great value to people, but I withhold it because they're bad or mean. So I'm just asking, and I'm not asking from a skeptical standpoint. I genuinely want to know what value you believe that you provide to people.
There are several people who have sought my financial advice within the last few years, as well as my slightly smaller number of people who have sought my relationship advice over the last 2-3 years.
Sorry, what kind of relationship advice?
Do you mean
family stuff or?
None of them were asking me about their romantic relationships. They were asking me about their family relationships and or the romantic relationships of their family members.
And so they came to you, who's had one date, for romantic advice for others.
It was not romantic advice so much as it was... So there are some people who know that I have a moral standard for my parents and what I consider to be abusive behavior. And so it was more like that in the context of... It happened to be in the context of romantic relationships, but it wasn't specifically about romance.
Okay, got it. All right, so you can give some good financial advice, or at least people have asked you for financial advice, a couple of people, and one or two people have asked you about relationship advice.
Yes.
Okay, so you've been an adult for 11 years. How much time have you spent giving this good advice in the realm of finance and relationships?
I mean, 2023 would be about the earliest you could start it, probably. So the last 3 years or so.
Okay. Did I ask you when it started?
Well, you asked how many years, correct?
No. How many hours have you spent giving people financial and relationship advice over the course of your adulthood?
I apologize. I thought you meant how many years it has been going on, not the number of hours specifically.
I've got a life to lead, so I can't do all these pauses. I mean, you and I both know it's not been more than a couple of hours.
No, it's been more than a couple of hours. I can think of specific conversations that lasted in excess of 2 hours.
Okay, so 6 or 7 or 8 hours, right?
I was going to start my estimate at maybe like 40, but
40
I
hours
don't know.
Giving people financial and relationship advice.
It's an estimate. But yes.
Okay, that's fine. We can go with 40 hours. So in 11 years, you've provided value 40 hours in this way.
Yeah.
Do you think that's providing a lot of value?
I'm not sure how to measure a lot. I wish it would have been more, yes.
Okay, it's not much value. I mean, let's say that I said I'm a great philosopher and I have spent 40 hours over the last 11 years doing philosophy, what would you say?
If you had 40 hours of content, I could see that being very valuable, 40 hours of content.
Okay, but over 11 years, or so, would you say that 40 hours of content over 11 years is a lot of value? Assuming that they're not big productions and movies, like they're just me talking.
Right, right. I mean, there's still a lot of pre-production that goes into learning philosophy before you can talk about it for 40 hours. If you're going to argue that I'm underperforming my potential, I'm not going to dispute that.
Okay. So outside of the 40 hours over the last 11 years, what other values outside of, you know, just working for someone and getting paid, what other value have you provided?
Well, I own a couple of rental properties, so.
No, I said outside I just said outside of economics. Did you not hear?
Well, I apologize. In my head, I had separated jobs from other forms of economics. There's been miscellaneous here and there, but nothing really worth mentioning.
Okay, so in 11 years as an adult, you've provided about 40 hours of value to people in your life, in outside of economics.
That seems a reasonable approximation.
Okay, so is that, you said that that's underperforming, is that right? Is that what you believe?
Yes.
Okay, so do you have only 40 hours of value to provide in 11 years, or do you have more value but have withheld it because of the people being bad or mean or something?
So obviously I had time where I could have had more conversations. So it's definitely the case that I could have provided more conversations.
Well, or, you know, with your knowledge of economics, you could have written a blog or done a podcast or some sort of media. I mean, it's been pretty easy to do that over the last 11 years. Or something. You could have given speeches. You could have given free financial advice to the poor. There's tons of things that you could have done that would have provided value, right?
Yes.
And that's my genuine question. Is you're obviously a very intelligent guy. You're well-read. You've been studying economics for a long time and so on. And you have good advice to give economically. I'm thinking sort of Caleb Hammer, who does these reviews of people's finances and so on, which is, I think, quite a useful. Oh, Dave Ramsey or something like that. So again, just sort of help me understand, is it because the world is too full of mean people that you can provide a lot more value, but you don't?
Because for example, with a blog or a podcast, that might be a separate issue than my social anxiety of talking to people in person. So I'm not sure those are the same cause.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I didn't quite understand your characterization. I thought I understood, and I'm sorry if I got this wrong. I thought I understood that you withheld value from people because they were mean or cruel or bad, which would make sense, right? I mean, if there's some criminal gang in the neighborhood and I feel nervous talking to them, that's not because I have social anxiety, but because they're dangerous criminals, right?
Well, this may not be in... I'm sorry to keep hedging like that all the time. What I'm trying to say is I definitely do have social anxiety. Numerous opportunities at work where I could just strike up a conversation with someone, but I don't. I just keep to myself and I do my job. I listen to my podcast and I don't really interact with anyone else. I don't know if that is merely social anxiety or if there's something else going on.
I have no idea. Honestly, I have no idea. I can't possibly judge that. I was just pointing out that you said that it was a rational response to people being mean, or at least it seemed like it was a rational response to people being mean. And then when you just drop in that it's social anxiety, it's confusing, right? Because then that would to say it's not a problem with people being mean. It's a problem in an exaggerated fear response to social situations that aren't scary. Does that make sense? Like if you're being cross-examined by the FBI and you might spend 20 years in prison if you make a mistake, it's not irrational to be anxious, right?
I think the reason that
I asked you a question and I would really, really appreciate it if you could get into the habit of answering my questions.
I thought that question was rhetorical because the answer is yes.
Okay, so yes, so it would not be, you would not be suffering from social anxiety if you were nervous about being cross-examined by the FBI, right? So if you're in a if you're in a situation of hostility, having anxiety or caution or fear makes perfect sense. Nobody says, I had a panic attack the exact moment that a bear started chasing me in the woods. right? Because you'd say, well, no, your fight or flight kicked in because a bear was chasing you in the woods, right? So this is what I'm trying to get across to you, is that when you say, well, I don't give value to people because people are mean, and then you say, I have social anxiety, these two things don't fit together in my mind. At least, I know that there's some overlap and so on, but when I asked you why you don't provide value, you didn't say, because I have anxiety, you said it's because people are mean. In other words, you're in a situation of hostility or danger, which makes perfect sense. I wouldn't want to share value with people when they're attacking me either, right? I mean, I've been attacked by the media, and I don't try to share value with the media, right? So if it's that people are mean, then it's a rational response to not want to share your the value that you have. But if it's social anxiety, that's a totally different category, if that makes sense.
I was thinking about them as the same thing, but I think I understand the distinction you're making.
Well, I don't want to get into water with man-eating sharks, right? Because they could bite me. So that's a rational anxiety. That's a rational fear. However, if it's a bunch of minnows or cute dolphins or something like that, then being afraid to go in would not make as much sense, right?
I'm not saying it's a rational fear, but I'm sorry, did you want me to answer that question? Yes,
I mean, how many times have I asked you to answer my questions? I don't know. You asked me, do you want me to answer your question?
I was just moving on because I thought that was a given, that sharks are more frightening than minnows.
Right. So, but that's the difference, right? So if you have anxiety about getting into a swimming pool with no fish in it, and you have the same, like, that would be probably a hydrophobia, fear of water or something like that, right? But if you have anxiety about getting into water where there's shark fins, that's not anxiety, that's a rational response, right? So when you say, I don't share value because people are mean, that makes sense. But then if you say, well, I don't share my value because I have an irrational anxiety of people, that's a different matter.
What if you have a fear of swimming in water because of a history of shark attacks, and that fear has been generalized to pools, even where you're confident there are no sharks, but you still get anxious around the being in water at all?
Well, that would be something that you would have to reason with yourself and say, it makes sense to be anxious about swimming with sharks. It doesn't make sense to be anxious about swimming in water. And you would go through exposure therapy, and you would recognize that your association was irrational, and you would work to undo that irrational association, right?
That's a pathological procedure there. Me, the connection was that my generalized social anxiety is because, and I acknowledge it's an irrational fear, but the reason I'm reserved or cagey with people that I haven't had the time to vet out, I think, is because of previously hostile people. And therefore, I acknowledge, of course, that that doesn't mean that everyone's hostile, but it still feels that way, that they might potentially prove hostile if I don't have experience with that individual to know for sure.
Okay. And do you think that you might be doing anything to generate that hostility?
It seems logical, yes.
That's okay, right. And what do you think you might be doing to generate? I'm not saying you're fully responsible for people's hostility or whatever, but what is it that you think you might be doing to generate hostility in people?
I don't know that I have a good answer to that.
I'll tell you the answer if you don't have a good answer. So usually the answer is that if we treat people as if they are hostile to us, we generally frustrate and insult them.
Does that make sense?
So, for instance, earlier you were saying that you were afraid of answering because you thought I might get mean or treat you badly if you made an honest mistake.
I didn't say that.
Okay, what I missed.
I said I worried that if I made an honest mistake, it might prevent me from getting value out of this conversation or prevent you from being able to do your job in this conversation. It wasn't specifically that you would get hostile. It's just that the conversation would prove fruitless.
Okay, so why would the conversation be fruitless if you make an honest mistake? So if you said, I grew up in XYZ town, and then a second or two later you said, oh, no, you know what? It was one town over. It was ABC town. So you made an honest mistake and you corrected it or whatever. How would that make the conversation be fruitless?
Well, if I didn't realize my mistake, if I got confused about anatomy when talking to a doctor and described the pain as being close to an organ that it actually wasn't, and I didn't realize that mistake, you could see how that would lead to a false diagnosis.
Well, no, because the doctor would know that you might be able to make, you might make a mistake and you're not a doctor, so he would ask you to point to where the pain was, right? Or he'd feel around your abdomen or wherever and he would feel for the pain, right? A doctor wouldn't just say, if you're not a doctor and you said, well, my pain is, you know, right tucked in behind my appendix, the doctor wouldn't accept that, right? So the doctor would verify that and would check where the pain was and would do a scan and this, that, and the other, right? So the analogy is somewhat limited.
I've met some pretty incompetent doctors, but I agree. You would probably have sussed out my mistake.
I hope that you wouldn't put me in the category of an incompetent doctor, because that would be pretty aggressive of you.
Yes. No, I clarified in your case, you would have felt out the mistake.
Right. So if you say it's right in behind my appendix, but it turns out to be somewhere else, that's not a problem, right?
In retrospect, I was overly concerned about it.
So you were concerned about a negative outcome if you made an honest mistake.
Mistakes frequently have negative outcomes.
I'm just asking you that you were concerned about having a negative outcome if you made an honest mistake.
Yes.
Now, how could we have a negative outcome if you made an honest mistake? Because that would be to say that I would somehow be negative in interacting with you if you made an honest mistake.
I don't want to characterize it as you being negative.
I'm the only other person in the interaction.
But there's a result of the conversation, regardless of the either person being negative.
There's a result in the conversation. What does that mean?
A correct or incorrect diagnosis, to return to the medical analogy.
Okay, so give me an example of an honest error that you were afraid of making or have made that would result in the conversation being unhelpful or pointless or fruitless.
Well, I earlier characterized my aggression as against my siblings as entirely defensive, and then I recharacterized it as there were at least some times where it wasn't. So,
well, no, you said the majority of the time it wasn't. Okay, and so you made, let's say, I don't know that that's an honest mistake, because honest mistakes tend to be random, but every time you've made a statement that you've ended up having to correct, it's gone from being more flattering to you to less flattering of you. So I don't know that that's I'm not saying it's conscious or you're lying, but when mistakes only go one way, they tend to be at least unconsciously motivated. But okay, so you went from saying, I'm a victim, to wait, I was actually the aggressor the majority of times. And again, whether that's an honest mistake or not, I don't really believe it is. And again, I'm not saying you're dishonest. I'm just saying that there's a ego protective motive that's going on there.
Yes.
But it wasn't a negative outcome. I didn't berate you or call you a liar or anything, right?
No. But whether the mistake was honest or dishonest, if I had just said the accurate thing the first time, it would have saved us time.
Okay. So let me ask you this. Why, since you knew that you were the aggressor the majority of times, we can get into this, why did you tell me that you weren't?
Maybe I'm just being defensive.
Well, don't maybe me. You're the only person in your head. I can't answer it.
Well, you have an uncanny ability to assess out when people are just being defensive. I'm still clinging to my defensive narrative about a majority of the conflicts. That even if I was the first one to get physical, I wasn't the first one to. That doesn't mean I instigated the conflict. And I suspect if my siblings if they would have won the fights more consistently, they probably would have initiated more consistently.
I mean, that's a what if universe where they were different ages and weren't obese, and right? So that's a whole different.
Yes.
Okay. So you had a bit of a self-serving, and listen, we all do. There's no big, so big curse on you. So you had a bit of a self-serving narrative, and you decided to tell me that you were the victim. I mean, even when you punched your 15-year-old kid brother so hard in the head that your knuckle broke, you said that you were the only one that got injured. And I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure it wasn't fun for him. Do you remember that?
I understand, of course, he was injured.
No, that's not what you said. You said I was the one who was injured.
I indicated that the most significant injury across our entire childhood, adulthood, whatever, was the broken knuckle.
All right. Okay, I don't mean you understand you're playing the victim when you punched a child. And that's just the reason I'm saying all of this is because I think that I hope you have a conscience about this stuff. And I think you need to wrestle with the fact, look, I've done wrong, you've done wrong, and we need to sort of confront and wrestle with it. Because your narrative minimizes the wrongs that you've done and tends to portray yourself as the victim and tends to portray other people as the aggressors. And that's an understandable defense mechanism, right? Because it's kind of tough to just look at the wrongs we've done and say, yep, that was me, I did that. And it's very tough to do that, especially when we're a child and we're subject to all these other kinds of pressures and so on. So I think one of the reasons that you may provoke negative responses from others is because the conversation is more about guarding an ego narrative rather than really dealing with, well, you know, sometimes the ugly truth, which we all have in our histories and so on. And so if you are treating me as if, like, if you confess and say, you know what, I feel really, really wretched about hurting my obese brothers. And yes, they hurt me too and so on. But, you know, that's not the problem that I have. The problem is that the majority of the time I was hurting them. And I remember there was one time when I took, I think you said glee or something like that, in hurting them and wanted to hurt them. And there's a cruelty in that. And it's kind of sad and appalling. And right. And if you'd have said all of that, I mean, to me, that would be very honorable and very honest and very brave and very direct. But instead, there's a lot of dancing around and there's a lot of changing stories. When you're challenged on things that are negative to you, you can't remember. But then you come up with all these very specific memories that are exculpatory, that make you look better and so on. And again, that's natural. Like, this is not any big criticism of you. This is kind of human nature. And so because there's a kind of ego-serving manipulation in your narratives, it's frustrating. Like to just try and get a rough estimate of how often you got into physical fights with your brother took like 15 minutes. And most people, I mean, this is my job, right? So to speak. But most people won't bother, right? It's like, oh, forget this, too much work. I'm moving on. And so I think that one of the reasons why you get negative responses from people is I think that you have yet to really sit down and confront your bad conscience. And this is not to say you weren't a victim as a child. You absolutely were. And this is not to say that your parents weren't terrible parents. It sounds like they were. And I really sympathize with all of that. But you still were an adult punching a 15-year-old. And you can say, well, I had all of these excuses. But the problem is, of course, if you make those excuses, then what you're saying is, when I'm in a situation of frustration or when I'm in a situation where I can't reason with someone, using violence is justified. But that means you have to stay distant from people. You know, if I say every time I see a redhead, I'm going to punch them, I can't go to the redhead festival or Ireland or Scotland or wherever the redheaded people are or whatever. Every time I see a redheaded person, I've got to run to the other side of the street and cover my eyes and put on my sunglasses to make them look like brunettes or whatever it is, right? So I think it's tough for you to have that direct connection with people because you're always concerned about how you're going to come across, about how you're going to appear. And so there's kind of a manipulative aspect to you, as there is to me, as there is to everyone. I mean, this is, again, we're back to sort of human nature as a whole. But I think that's where a lot of the isolation comes from, if that makes sense.
The narrative, I think, makes sense. I'm not yet sure whether it fits or not. I'll have to reflect on it more.
Okay, well, that sounds like something you want to do on your own. Is there anything else I could chat about with you, or should we close it?
Mm.
I mean, because this is a control mechanism. This is a control mechanism wherein I try to give you some insights, which you've come to me for, and you say, it doesn't fit, I need to think about it, which closes the conversation, right? Because I'm not just going to sit here on the phone while you think about it, if that makes sense, which is fine.
I understand. Do you think there's anything external that I should do?
Hang on. But we can't just skate over the fact that you don't believe, which is fine. I mean, nobody has to accept anything that I say, obviously, right? I mean, it's totally voluntary. But I've had sort of an analysis, which is quite complicated, around your conscience and about directness and about assuming that people are going to punish you for innocent mistakes, which puts them in the role of abuser, which alienates people from you. Like, there's a whole complicated ball of twine that I've just kind of given you that you've said that you need to take time, I assume, on your own.
Yes.
To unravel. So I think you should take the time to unravel that, because if I'm completely wrong, then me telling you what you should do practically doesn't make any sense, right?
Agreed. But if you're correct, then...
No. I can't do that. I can't go if I'm correct, because you need to sit with it, as you say, and puzzle it out and figure out whether it fits or sits well with you. Still talking. So I can't just sort of go if I'm correct. Because you need to, I don't want to waste time, because if I'm not correct, then all advice I give from here on in is not only not beneficial to you, but it's not beneficial to anyone who listens. In fact, it could be harmful, right? So, you need to figure out what's correct, and you're certainly welcome to do that.
I understand. And there may not be anything that fits this category that I'm asking about. But besides internal reflection on this, is there something external that would be beneficial? So I know, of course, you recommend talk therapy.
Well, yes, but you've been listening to me for 5 years, and I assume you haven't done it, so that recommendation doesn't mean much to you, which, again, is totally fine.
For reasons I don't think would be a good use of time to get into, I'm more able in the future to go to talk therapy than I was over the last 5 years. And
you mean for reasons of cost?
Sort of cost and time, things like that, yes.
Well, no, you've already told me that you have time, and I'm going to go out on a limb here and assume you already said, you said earlier that you have time. And also, if you're giving people lots of financial advice, I assume that you have some decent finances.
I don't know what you mean by time. When did I say I had time?
Oh, earlier when we were talking about your life, you said earlier, it doesn't matter. I mean, but you don't have a wife, you don't have a girlfriend, you don't have kids, you don't have much of a social life. You say you go to work, you listen to your podcast, you go home, so you have time, right?
Okay, I see what you mean.
And you have money because you're giving people financial advice. See, this is why communication with you tends to be quite confusing. Is you say, well, I haven't gone to therapy basically because I don't have time or money or something like that. And you've already told me that you have time, and you've already told me which is an inference, that if you're giving people 40 hours or 20 hours of financial advice, that they're coming to you because you have some financial success, right?
At the moment, I'm working 60 hours per week, and I don't have spare change on a month-to-month basis.
So why are people coming to you for financial advice? If you're working why are people coming to you for financial advice, and why are you giving financial advice if you're working time and a half and you're broke?
Well, my money's tied up in real estate deals at the moment.
Okay, so that's fine. So you chose to invest in real, you chose to invest in real estate rather than go to therapy. But that's not because you can't go to therapy. It's because you chose to invest in real estate, which is fine.
So next month, I get another unit lease. I should have free cash flow month to month. So I would be in a position to pursue therapy, potentially.
Good. All right. But yeah, it's not because you couldn't. It's because you made choices.
Yes.
Okay. That's all I'm saying. So I'm saying that I think therapy is a high priority, and you chose to invest in real estate and all of that, which is, again, it's fine. But I just don't want people to get the impression that you couldn't have taken my advice. You chose not to, which is, again, it's fine. I mean, nobody has to take my advice, of course. But all right, is there anything else I can help you with? That's brief.
Well, outside of therapy, is there something that would be useful for me to do? I don't know what the, join a social skills for adults class, or I don't know what.
Yeah, I can't give you advice because I don't know if the advice I've already given you applies or not. So you have to figure out whether that applies, and you know, maybe we could talk again about that.
All right. So if in a week I realize you're 100% right, is there something I should do in that case?
I couldn't tell you because I don't know what aspects of it would be right, how much of it is right, and so on. Yeah, I mean, it's like you come to me with a knee problem. I give you a solution. You don't know if it's right. And then you say, what kind of sport should I play? It's like, well, I don't know. I don't know how well the healing's going to go. I don't know whether I'm correct or not, or how much I'm correct, or how much work you're going to do on it. So I can't answer that.
But you would say that talk therapy would be good.
I'm a big fan of talk therapy. It does seem to have the best increase in overall happiness for people of just about anything you can invest in. If you get a good therapist, and I've got a whole podcast, I think it's 1927, How to Find a Great Therapist. You can just go to fdrpodcast.com and just do a search for therapist and you can find it.
I believe I have listened to that episode.
Oh, fantastic.
I will.
All right. I really appreciate your time today, and have yourself a good afternoon. It was a very interesting chat, and I wish you the best.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.